Welcome to The Patriot, 1776. Hi, this is John Mady, and I am the pastor of Victory Baptist Church in North Fort Myers, Florida. And who is the Patriot of 1776? You are, and I am. And so is everyone who loves America and wants to follow the principles of our founding fathers. The last sentence of the Declaration of Independence reads like this: "And for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor." If it had not been for the Patriots of 1776, we would still be paying taxes to England and drinking a spot of tea at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Help us win back America now, just like the Patriots of 1776 won America in the first place. You should take notes and use your Bible. We will give you our mailing address later. Today, we're going to delve into a little bit of what communism is. Let's go back and look at our dates that we're working on. First of all, the year 1215, the Magna Carta. And then the year 1765 is Sir William Blackstone. Now, for now, we're going to pass 1776 and the things surrounding that date. And we're going to go to another year that means an awful lot to the United States. And that year is 1848. And it's by someone outside of our country, as a matter of fact, two people, mostly Karl Marx, but Friedrich Engels also helped Karl Marx in writing the Communist Manifesto. I'm going to read some of the Communist Manifesto that it might help you to understand a little bit about what goes on in the world and also what goes on in the United States. Now, as I read some of this, you're going to find an awful lot of it that parallels what we're already doing. And before we get started, there are two words that are in the reading that I want to explain to you and change those words to today's English so it would be easier for you to understand. The first word is bourgeoisie. Bourgeoisie is a word that Engels wrote about, and he put a note in the Communist Manifesto, and he says that the word bourgeoisie is meant the class of modern capitalists. Remember, he's writing this in 1848. And he says that the owners of the means of social production and employers of wage labor. And for bourgeoisie, what we're going to use in a word in substituting for that, the meaning for today, we'll just say that they are capitalists or the rich. And of course, if you look around today and you listen to who the rich are, it just depends on who you're talking to. So we're talking about the rich. We're talking about the capitalists, and in 1848, he was talking about the people who were employers. The other word that we're going to change or translate is the word proletariat. The word proletariat is the class of modern wage laborers who, having no means of production of their own, are reduced to selling their labor power in order to live. So it's the small business owners or the large business owners, and it's the poor people, people who have to work for a living. So we'll just call them the rich and the poor. And it starts out, and it says, "The history of all hitherto society is the history of class struggles. Freeman and slave, patrician and plebeian, lord and serf, guildmaster and journeyman, in a word, oppressor and oppressed. stood in constant opposition to one another, carried on an uninterrupted, now hidden, now open fight, a fight that each time ended either in a revolutionary reconstitution of society at large or in the common ruin of the contending classes. Now, you might as well know right away that the first thing they talk about is the rich and the poor. And you have to look at the United States today and take a look at what the Democrats try to do. They are always talking about and trying to divide the United States into the rich and the poor. This is the first thing that communists want to do, is to divide people. And you can certainly know that in the Democrat Party, they certainly want to divide. They want to divide any kind of a group that they can, just having people fight against one another, because that's the way they come to democracy, and that's the way they come to socialism, and that's the way they come to communism. In the earlier epochs of history, we find almost everywhere a complicated arrangement of society into various orders, a manifold graduation of social rank. In ancient Rome, we have patricians, knights, plebeians, slaves. In the Middle Ages, feudal lords, vassals, guildmasters, journeymen, apprentices, serfs. In almost all of these classes, again, subordinate graduations. The modern bourgeois society that has sprouted from the ruins of feudal society has not done away with class antagonisms. It has but established new classes, new conditions of oppression, new forms of struggle in place of the old ones. Our epoch, the epoch of the rich, possess, however, this distinctive feature. It has simplified the class antagonisms. Society as a whole is more and more splitting up into two great hostile camps, into two great classes directly facing each other, the rich and the poor. And so this is the first thing that the Communist Manifesto wants to bring out, is that you have the rich and the poor. And they try, as you read through the whole Communist Manifesto, I've read it through three or four times, as you read through it, it continually is trying to divide people so that they can come to communism. And of course, people who don't have anything are easily persuaded into believing that communism is the best direction for them to go. All right, let's go back to reading. What else does the history of ideas prove than that intellectual production changes its character in proportion as material production is changed? The ruling ideas of each age have ever been the ideas of its ruling class. When people speak of ideas that revolutionize society, they do but express the fact that within the old society, the elements of the new one have been created, and that the dissolution of the old ideas keep even pace with the dissolution of the old conditions of existence. When the ancient world was in its last throes, the ancient religions were overcome by Christianity. When Christian ideas succumbed in the 18th century to rationalist ideas, feudal society fought its death battle with the then revolutionary rich. The ideas of religious liberty and freedom of conscience merely gave expression to the sway of free competition within the domain of knowledge. Undoubtedly, it would be said, religion, moral, philosophical, and judicial ideas have been modified in the course of historical development. But religion, morality, philosophy, political science, and law constantly survive this change. Just to give you, let's stop reading for a second here. Just to give you an idea of what they're saying here is that Christianity overcame everything else that was about religion. But the fact of the matter is, If you look at the Bible and you study the Bible, you will find out that God's Word is a conservative book. And that's why communism hates the Bible. That's why communism always wants to get rid of Christians, because Christians are the hardest people to destroy mentally. And so they hate the idea of religious liberty and the freedom of conscience. And it says that religious liberty and the freedom of conscience merely give expression to the sway of free competition within the domain of knowledge. All right, let's go back to our reading now. Undoubtedly, it will be said, religion, moral, philosophical, and judicial ideas have been modified in the course of historical development. But religion, morality, philosophy, political science, and law constantly survive this change. There are, besides eternal truths, such as freedom, justice, etc., that are common to all states of society. But communism abolishes eternal truths. It abolishes all religion and all morality instead of constituting them on a new basis. It therefore acts in contradiction to all past historical experience. What does this accusation reduce itself to? The history of all past society has consisted in the development of class antagonisms, antagonisms that assumed different forms of different epochs. But whatever form they may have taken, one fact is common to all past ages, that is, the exploitation of one part of society by the other. No wonder, then, that the social conscience of past ages, despite all the multiplicity and variety it displays, moves with certain common forms or general ideas which cannot completely vanish except with the total disappearance of class antagonisms. The Communist Revolution is the most radical rupture with traditional property relations. No matter that its development involves the most radical rupture with traditional ideas, let us have done with the rich objections to communism. So now we're going to take a look at what they say, what communism says that the rich want to do, and what communism has to do. And now we go back to reading, and here's the first thing that communism has to do to be successful. Quote, "We have seen above that the first step in the revolution by the working class is to raise the poor to the position of ruling class to establish democracy." Unquote. I want to stop there for a minute. You can see this is what democracy is all about. When you get to democracy, and we're going to talk about that a little bit later, but right now, just to let you know, when you talk about the Democrat Party, and you're talking about democracy, this is what communism wants, is for a country to get to democracy. And so you'll notice that's what the Democrat Party wants. The Democrat Party is doing everything that communism says to do to get to communism. And some of the things that we're already doing, we're going to read here in just a few more paragraphs when it talks about establishing democracy. Now let's go back to reading. "The poor will use its political supremacy to wrest by degrees all capital from the rich, to centralize all instruments of production in the hands of the state, that is, of the proletariat organized as the ruling class." The proletariat or the poor. So of the poor organized as the ruling class, and to increase the total of productive forces as rapidly as possible. Of course, in the beginning, this cannot be effected except by means of despotic inroads on the rights of property and on the conditions of the rich production. By means of measures, therefore, which appear economically insufficient and untenable, by which in the course of the movement outstrip themselves and necessitate further inroads upon the old social order and are unavoidable as a means of entirely revolutionizing the mode of production. And let's stop there for a minute. If you'll notice, all the things that have made America successful, the Democrats are trying to destroy. All the things that give us freedom, the Democrats are trying to destroy. And we're going to start naming a lot of these things later on. But I want you to understand, just in a general sense, just in general principle, what Marx and Engels have developed in communism. And when you talk about a Marxist, a socialist, a communist, a Democrat. See, people in the Democrat Party don't even understand what their party stands for. They don't know that the leaders at the top are pushing towards communism, but that's what they're doing. And so let's read some of these things that the Communist Manifesto says that they want to accomplish. Now, it says these measures, and they're going to name some measures here. These measures will, of course, be different in different countries. Nevertheless, in the most advanced countries, the following will be pretty generally applicable. Number one, abolition of property and land and application of all rents of land to public purposes. In other words, no one will own property. And that's what Agenda 21 is all about, is getting property away from all the people. And you'll even notice it in all the different counties around Florida, and even here in Lee County. They're still talking about buying land for the environment. And whenever you hear about that, all that is Agenda 21 from 1992 for communism to move in and take over and take the government away from people. And so when you hear about government wanting to buy more property, the answer should always be no, because what they're doing is controlling the property, taking the property away from all the citizens. The second thing is a heavy progressive or graduated income tax. That's exactly what we have. They're already doing that. We have the more money that you make, the higher percentages you have to pay in taxes. That's a heavy progressive or graduated income tax. And then number three, abolition of all right of inheritance. Did you notice Hillary has said in her going around to the different places and giving speeches that she wants to have a 65% death tax? So that all the money that you make all during your lifetime, 65% of it, right off the top, goes to the federal government. And then who knows how much the state is taking and how much that the county is taking. And so I've heard some Democrats running for office that say that they'd like to see 100% inheritance tax, 100% death tax. If you die, all your money goes to the state. And then number four, confiscation of the property of all immigrants and rebels. So they're just going to come in and take the property away. And they already have done that in some cases. So a man in California who had a great farm business, and this is a man from another country that came here. He had a great farm business, and he was raising crops for Oriental restaurants. And he didn't even know it, but he ran over some field mice, and somebody turned him in. And don't you know, they came out and they arrested him for running over those field mice. He had no idea that he had done that. And they arrested his tractor for running over the field mice, and they took his property away. And he has nothing then. And I never heard the result of whatever happened to that. But they took his property away. and never gave him anything back that I know of. Never heard anything of him giving it all, getting it all back. And then number five, the centralization of credit in the hands of the state by means of a national bank with state capital and an exclusive monopoly. I heard not long ago about Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Those are government banks, and they owned 90% of all the mortgages in the United States. Now, isn't that a great 90%? Did I say 90%? That's what I meant to say, was 90% of all the home mortgages in the United States. Number six, centralization of the means of communication and transport into the hands of the state. And what that means, you know, that's already happening. You have to get permission from the state every once in a while. You have to get, I think it's once a year, you have to get permission from the state to continue your radio station. And this is one of the things that Hillary would like to do if she becomes president. Of course, we're already past elections when this is being made, but when this is being broadcasted. But she would like to get rid of all the talk radio, so there's no competition for all that she wants to do. Number seven, extension of factories and instruments of production owned by the state, like General Motors. The bringing into cultivation of wastelands and the improvement of the soil generally in accordance with a common plan. That common plan is to take over all the farmland so that the government controls the food. And that's why when you see in communist countries, there's not much food on the shelves in the grocery stores in communist countries. It's really interesting to watch people who come from communist countries and go into one of our stores and see all the food on the food shelves in our grocery stores. Number eight, equal obligation of all to work, establishment of industrial armies, especially for agriculture. Number nine, combination of agriculture with manufacturing industries, gradual abolition of the distinction between town and country, like what Hillary wants. She wants to just erase all the borders of the United States and make it so there's a more equitable distribution of the population over the country. Number 10, and we already have this one, free education for all children in public schools, an abolition of child factory labor in its present form. Don't forget, this is 1848. Combination of education with industrial production, etc. And then it says that political power, so-called, is merely the organized power of one class for oppressing another class. And so here in the Communist Manifesto, it's not hard to go through it and see the things that are already happening in the United States. Now I want to read to you the last three paragraphs of the Communist Manifesto. Here it says, in short, the communists everywhere support every revolutionary movement against the existing social and political order of things. In all these movements, they bring to the front as the leading question in each case, the property question, no matter what its degree of development at the time. Finally, they labor everywhere for the union, an agreement of the democratic parties of all countries. The communists disdain to conceal their views and aims. They openly declare that their ends can be attained only by the forcible overthrow of all existing social conditions. Let the ruling classes tremble at a communist revolution. The poor have nothing to lose but their chains. They have a world to win. Working men of all countries, unite. End of Communist Manifesto. It's not hard, even just from this, to know what they're trying to do. You can see where the communists everywhere support every revolutionary movement against the existing social and political order of things. In all these movements, they bring to the front as the leading question in each case the property question, no matter what its degree of development at the time. And you'll have to notice here that they don't want anyone to own anything. Their big deal is to make everyone equal. Only they don't want to make everyone equal at the top. They want to make everyone equal at the bottom. It's a whole lot easier to control poor people. So they're trying to make everyone poor. That's why they want to get rid of the rich people, is so that the rich people will be just like the poor people and have no more ability to do things. Then it says, finally, they labor everywhere for the union and agreement of the Democrat parties of all countries. So there's a Democrat party in every country to try to take over that country's freedom. So it comes to a point where the country can no longer take care of itself because the communists, the Democrats, have taken over the country. And the people who are in the Democrat Party, most of those people, 99% of those people, have no idea what the Democrat Party really stands for. And then the communists, they openly declare that their ends can be attained only by forcible overthrow of all existing social conditions. Let the ruling classes tremble at a communist revolution. The proletariats have nothing to lose but their chains. They have a world to win. Working men of all countries, unite. So comes the end of today's message. We appreciate so much that you spent time to be with us. If you enjoy our program, would you please take time to send us any questions you might have, along with a love offering of any amount? And if you send at least $25, we will send you a 92-page book, When Good Men Do Nothing, Who Will Speak? Our address is The Patriot, 1776, at 14505 Nathan Hale Lane, North Fort Myers, Florida, 33917. Again, The Patriot, 1776. The address is 14505 Nathan Hale Lane, North Fort Myers, Florida, 33917. Talk to you again next time. Goodbye now.